traveling far without a home, not without a star.
Good morning, Ride Talk Radio listeners, and welcome to Capitol Hill Insights. My name is Elizabeth Letchworth, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. I hope every mother listening had a wonderful and blessed Mother's Day weekend. I know here in the Capitol Hill Insights studio in Florida, the weather was beautiful. Mothers were honored all over the state, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Capitol Hill Insights, as most of you know, is a radio program. It's designed to outline the comings and goings of your Congress, both the House and the Senate. What they do each week, we talk about the schedule in both chambers and maybe touch on a hearing or two if that's going on behind the scenes. And the Monday show is basically the schedule of the week. We outline it and talk about what Congress will be doing. And we also wrap up the week on Friday, the same time slot. It's 11 a.m. Eastern Standard for the Monday and the Friday. And we go over what they did for the week, if they did do what they said they were going to do, if the House or the Senate did it well, or did they botch it up, did they change plans, and did they represent you well? And eventually we'll have call-in capability so that you could call in and tell me what you think of what Congress did. And I'm going to ask you to start grading Congress each week as to their workload. Was it wimpy or was it sort of heavy? And did they do what they said they were going to do? That sort of thing. So I'm looking forward to us getting the call-in capability. But in the meantime, you get a 30-minute monologue from me, your host. Again, I'm Elizabeth Letchworth, and it's Capitol Hill Insights. And Capitol Hill Insights is brought to you by GradeGov.com. GradeGov.com, that's G-R-A-D-E, gov.com, is a free website that allows anybody that joins to grade any member of Congress. And you simply sign up for the service. Go on the site, type in maybe your member of Congress or maybe somebody you saw on the news that you'd like to give a shout out to or holler at maybe. Type their name in the find box and it will continue to find the member. Maybe you can't spell it right or you only halfway know how to spell it. It will help you find the member of Congress, and then up pops their page on GradeGov. All members of Congress, 435 House members and the 100 senators, have a page on GradeGov, and their page consists of their biopic, which is their official photo that all of us pay for when we do our taxes, how long they've been in Congress. You'll see when they're next up for re-election. You'll be able to read constituent letters to them. You'll see their average grade in their district or state if they're a senator, and their average grade nationally. And it's broken down in Republican, Democrat, and Independent. And that, by the way, you have to denote when you join, what's your party affiliation. So when you do your grading, we can average your grade into the member of Congress's grade for his state or national grade, but we put it in the right party affiliation. So anyway, go on the site, find the member of Congress you want to grade, read some of the fun facts on the member of Congress's page, like his or her net worth, how about what unemployment was in the state when they were first elected, and then what's unemployment there now, and some of their votes, like their TARP and their stimulus votes, or maybe did they vote for health care? Did they vote for cap and trade? And you can also, if it is your member of Congress, and when you join, we ask you some questions to determine which is your member of Congress, like your zip code and maybe your street number, because sometimes more than one member of Congress will straddle the same zip code. So we need to know some of that in some districts. And if you do end up being on the page of your member of Congress, you can actually vote, cast a vote as to whether you would vote to reelect that person. That you're limited to one time and one time only between now and November. And if it's not your member of Congress, it politely tell you that you're not permitted to vote for this person. So go on and have fun with the site, but then also remember, send your grade. While you're on this Member of Congress's page, you simply hover over an A, B, C, D, or F, just like the grades we all got in school, and it will change color, whichever grade you stay on. And then it'll prompt you, would you like to send a letter? And you don't have to if you don't want to. If you just want to simply grade, that's fine. But if you want to send a letter, it will auto-generate part of the letter. It'll auto-generate your user ID name. That's the name you pick for your handle, so to speak. Dear Senator or Dear Representative so-and-so, I gave you, let's just say, a C. I gave you a C today because, remember, you hovered over that grade and that's the one you picked. And then it lets you finish the letter. Finish typing because you did this or you did that or I'm mad at you or I'm pleased with you, whatever. And then click send and you've just graded and sent a letter to a member of Congress. I will say one more thing on behalf of GradeGov. GradeGov's website does get through when all the other or most of the other websites don't get through, simply because almost any other website that you've visited that maybe will allow you to write a letter to a member of Congress, it sends you to the Senator of the House website to write emails. And friends, I hate to tell you this, but that just dumps your email into an auto computer generated nothing website. You're going to get an auto generated computer letter back. No one ever saw your letter. It just went into the category of healthcare or deficit or whatever your issue was. It puts a little check mark in a box that the senator or the member of Congress got a letter relating to that, but no one really sees it. So I will say GradeGov is different. GradeGov sends your emails and your grades directly to real live staffers that actually work in Washington for members of Congress. It is tied to a personal email account in all 535 Member of Congress's offices. And those staffers move around a lot. They quit and go on to other things. So we're constantly updating that. But yes, they go to real people. They go to actual staffers that work for members of Congress. So that's the sponsor. That's what the show is about. I'm going to start off this week with the Senate. What's going on in the Senate of the United States? They're in the middle of their third week on the debate of the financial reform bill. This is the bill that has been created, and the White House has been touting it for a couple of weeks. It's been created to put in place safeguards, potentially, so that we never have another one of the financial meltdowns that we did in the past couple of years with Wall Street and all the bailouts and whatnot. The Senate's been dealing with this bill for 3 weeks. The leader would like to conclude it this week, but that really does look unlikely. There's over 100 amendments remaining to the bill, and a couple of them I'm going to talk about for just a second. One is this bureau that the bill will create. Yep, another regulatory agency, another big government, in my view, overreach. But regardless, it creates a Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. This Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, in a lot of Republicans' eyes, reaches too much into our personal finances, ours meaning yours and mine. It's been written that there's, if you have a PayPal account because you're a buyer or a auction owner on eBay, that it will be able to look into your PayPal account. I don't know about you, but I'm not too thrilled with that. That's not something I want federal government doing, certainly not with my account. So, I mean, there's reaches like that that the Republicans want to sort of drill down and make sure don't happen. And that whole issue really hasn't been debated much. So they have to deal with that discussion this week, the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. But also another one that's kind of a big deal is the future of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's that government-sponsored enterprise, which is basically a business that is chartered, means it was started by the federal government, and still has strings attached to the federal government, but but for a lot of respects, awful lot of respects, this government-sponsored enterprise called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is a private business in what we think of as a private business. It doesn't have direct obligations to the federal government, but the federal government can kind of regulate somewhat what it does because it was started by them. That's called a government-sponsored enterprise. Anyway, we know what the government did with Fannie and Freddie back beginning as far back as 2000 all the way into 2006 was that it basically legislated that they meet previously legislated housing goals. And that's what a lot of people say led to the financial meltdown, that Fannie and Freddie had all of these mandates from the government. You have to give all these loans to people that we know now really shouldn't have gotten a home loan. You know, not everybody in this country is or should be or supposed to be a homeowner. That doesn't make them a bad person or a good person, or it just is what it is. Not everybody in this country, in my view, was ordained or deemed to be a homeowner. There are people that travel too much, that really don't need the ties of a house, or that are their jobs are too sporadic, that they don't need the ties of a constant mortgage. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and analyze the housing industry, but I do believe there are certain people that just shouldn't be homeowners. They should be renters. But this issue of the future of Fannie and Freddie is another issue that needs to be taken care of while they debate the financial reform bill this week. And Senator McCain, I think most of you know, a Republican from Arizona, has an amendment that basically says the government-sponsored enterprise of Fannie and Freddie, the charter, is the ties are going to be cut from the federal government, and it'll happen within 30 months. And if they end up standing on their own and don't fold, if they end up standing on their own and becoming a business all by themselves, then obviously the mandate for that housing, pushing those housing goals obviously wouldn't be in place any longer, and it would turn Fannie and Freddie into a regular business, a regular private privately owned business like our banks are. So, or our banks were, I should say. Those two issues are of some of the many issues that still need to be debated. So that's what the Senate will be doing. A little bit of a yawner unless you're a banking geek, but you might want to tune in and turn to C-SPAN 2 to see how that bill is progressing. But that's what they'll be doing this week on the floor. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the House is going to do or what they aren't doing and why they aren't doing anything. And then we're going to wrap it up with the defeat this past weekend of a three-term Republican senator. He lost in the primary, folks. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm going to take a quick break. Talk to you in just a second. Thanks.
It's a beautiful morning.
And welcome back to Capitol Hill Insights. Thanks for joining me again for the second segment of this 30-minute program. I left you all with debating and talking about what the Senate was going to do this week, which basically is try to wrap up the financial reform bill, but there's lots left over. And I promised that we'd talk about what the House of Representatives has on its plate this week. It was a little amusing Thursday or Friday of last week. The Republican whip, Eric Cantor of Virginia, came on the floor and started asking the majority leader, Cindy Hoyer. He's a Democrat from Maryland, and does the floor schedule and the announcements and that kind of thing for the speaker. While she doesn't do a lot on the floor. She uses her leaders, and that's typical. That's the role of the speaker. As a matter of fact, the speaker a lot of times doesn't even vote. She only votes on the big ticket things. And it's a ceremonial position to a large extent. So bottom line is her majority leader a lot of times is doing the statements on the floor for schedule and how late they're going to be in session and that kind of thing. And Eric Cantor came on the floor last week, towards the end of last week, and was asking the leader, Steny Hoyer, what's going on for next week? How come we don't know what we're going to be debating? What are we going to be debating? And it was a little funny to hear Leader Hoyer used a ton of mays and mights. Well, we may be taking up the budget resolution, or we might get to the tax extenders bill. You know, I maintain that a lot of the mays and the mites and a lot of the really consternation that the House is going through right now, and they actually have been since really after they came back from the Easter or Passover recess, is because so many of their members have gone back home, have been back home, especially during the Easter time, and have heard from their constituents, or not just started to hear from them, I guess started to listen to them, and have heard they're in trouble. They're in trouble with their constituents. They're sideways with them. Their constituents are not happy. Many of you all remember last August, the recesses of last August, where they heard a earful from their members of Congress on how angry they were. It was actually 2 Augusts ago. Anyway, Easter was a lot like that. It just wasn't as publicized. So these members of Congress came back in droves and began whining to their leaders, you can't have me vote on anything controversial. I'm getting in trouble with my members, my folks back home. I don't want to cast any more of these tough votes. Well, that leaves the leadership in a real weird position, real strange position, because there's lots of tough votes left for this year. A lot of them will come out of the budget resolution if they do a budget resolution. A lot of tough votes on whether to fund this or fund that come out of that budget. And they've yet to do a budget, and really most Congresses, if they're going to do a budget, they've done one by now. They've already passed a budget by now. So this Congress is way behind, and it's because they can't make these decisions because they don't have the votes. They go to do a whip count, just a count on to make sure they've got the votes on any particular issue, and too many of their members say, nope, count on me, I can't support that, nope, I can't do that, that'll get my constituents mad at me. They need to be doing an appropriations, a supplemental appropriations. This bill funds the money for the Iraq and Afghani wars and what's going on in Pakistan. When they funded the wars last year, this was always going to be a two-step process. I don't agree with the two-step process. I don't agree that they can deem these bills an emergency and therefore not pay for them, and that's what they typically do with these war supplementals. And when I say they, I mean the Bush administration did this in droves every time they came to Congress with a war supplemental. They deemed it an emergency. And the emergency designation is not that hard to do. It can come from the president or it can come from Congress. It's not unlike, and I'm sorry, many of you are probably more familiar with this than I would hope you would be, but it's not unlike the federal emergency designation that governors can do when their state gets devastated by a natural disaster, a flood, like the poor folks in Tennessee. Boy, my heart goes out to them. My prayers go out to them. The flooding there is just absolutely unprecedented. But it's very much like that, where the governor would deem it an emergency, a natural disaster, And there's certain thresholds that have to be met, but the governor sort of pushes that first button, the president agrees, and that starts the flow of money to that state. And it also undoes some red tape and makes other avenues available without checking a bunch of the boxes that in the normal course would have to be checked. So this emergency designation that Congress can do with bills is similar to that. And as I said, the Bush administration did this over and over and over with the war in Iraq. So can't really say that Obama is abusing it yet, but actually he has come close to meeting the total 8-year figure that the Bush administration used just in this last year and a half. But I tell you that because there is a need for a war emergency, well, I won't call it emergency, a war supplemental. And the Department of Defense has said that this bill has been needed since March. Folks, we're in the middle of May. And this is another one of those bills that the House of Representatives can't get passed. They can't muster the votes because they've got too many of their people that say, I don't want to have to support a right now it's a $33 billion bill, but most Hill watchers believe it'll turn into almost a $50 billion bill. They'll add the Haiti money to it, and they'll add other programs that aren't an emergency. I don't believe that the war supplemental is an emergency. They knew it was going to be needed and how much it was going to be needed last year. To me, an emergency is Haiti. An emergency is the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. The emergency are the floods in Tennessee. Not something you already know is going to happen. Just plan for it. Budget and plan for it. But that's for another whole debate. The appropriations supplemental is another one of those that the House should have passed a month ago. Instead, when Eric Cantor pushes Steny Hoyer to, what are we doing next week kind of statements, he gets a bunch of mays. We may do this. We might do that. To the point where really the House is doing very little this week. They're going to consider what they call a compete bill. And this is an authorization bill that sets funding levels for research and development at federal science agencies. It's kind of medium-sized, small authorization bill. Not a big deal. Not something that should take any really real time on the floor. But they'll stretch it out. They'll make it appear that there's a lot of activity and a lot of debate for it. They'll stretch it out for a day or so. So that will be the House of Representatives' accomplishment this week. Meanwhile, all this other stuff is going on behind the scenes, and they're struggling to get the votes to pass, like I said, some of this must-pass legislation that they're going to have to figure out one way or the other pretty darn soon. I'm going to take another quick break, and we're going to talk about what happened with a 3-term Republican senator, really a matriarch of a state. He's not coming back next year. Let's hear more about that in just a few minutes. Thanks and stay tuned.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much. You talk about people that you don't know. You talk about people wherever you go. You just talk too much.
Hi, and welcome back to Capitol Hill Insights. We're going to wrap up this Monday program talking about what happened to a 3-term, extremely conservative Republican senator. Senator Bob Bennett of Utah, been there for 18 years. His dad was a United States Senator for Utah for years. So the Bennett name is a big name in Utah. Senator Bennett was running for a 4th term, wanted to be the GOP pick to run against a Democratic candidate for the Senate next year. And guess what? This past weekend, Their state has conventions instead of primaries, but they're sort of like primaries. Their convention voted not to bring him back to the Senate next year. Yep, he lost for his bid to become the GOP's candidate and hopefully become a four-term Republican senator from the state of Utah. As a matter of fact, a Tea Party candidate beat him. And many, many people believe, as well as I think Senator Bennett at this point, it's time to sort of look inward when you've lost, what did I do wrong? He supported and voted for the TARP legislation. And you know what? American Tea Party folks, their voices are getting through. Gray Gov voices are getting through. Let me tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. If you go on gradegov.com, look up Bob Bennett of Utah, you know what he was getting? Now, this is a very, very conservative Republican. People that are just passing through the site of Gradegov's, oh, it's nothing but a Republican or conservative website. No, it is not. No, it is not. Go on gradegov.com. Type in Bob Bennett's name in the find box. You know what you're going to find out? He was getting a D- from the folks in his state. Well, who'd have thunk it? Just a general passing through of Grade Gov, you'd have thought he's a conservative Republican, he's been there forever. But know what? He wasn't getting the grades of the A's and the B's. So Grade Gov is actually making it through in Congress. They're crashing through, I like to call it a glass ceiling. They're making it through. Their voices are getting through to Congress because they sure got through to Senator Bennett. They crashed through his world, unfortunately. And he's not going to be returning as a fourth-term senator from the state of Utah. I don't mean to laugh. Senator Bennett is basically a pretty nice man. I knew him fairly well in the Senate. So I wish him well. I'm sorry that he didn't listen to Grade Gov. I'm sorry he didn't listen to his constituents. But maybe he's the example, and others will listen before it's too late. I will say this. You remember that feeling we talked about just a minute ago, that the leaders in the House are struggling to get bills passed because too many of their members of Congress are coming back from recesses saying, I can't have tough votes? Bob Bennett's going to bring that home to them even more. But you know what? There are five additional states having primaries in the next week, between now and next Tuesday, the 18th. Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Arkansas, Nebraska, Oregon, six, and Kentucky. All of those are going to have primaries or conventions, whatever their state law requires, picking the next candidates for their federal offices, whether it be the House or the Senate. In Pennsylvania, for example, they're deciding whether to send Arlen Specter back as the Democratic senator. And he's in a tough, tough primary with a member of Congress, Joe Sestak. Check out both of them on GradeGov. In Arkansas, you have Blanche Lincoln, who's a senator from Arkansas, a Democratic senator. She's in a tough primary race with, I believe it's the lieutenant governor. But check out how she's doing on GradeGov. My point is this. Once these six primaries have occurred, and if some of the incumbents are bumped off, like Senator Bennett was bumped off by his constituents, sorry I had to do that, in Utah, then that feeling, that anxiety that those members of Congress are feeling, that'll bleed even more over to the Senate. And both the senators, the Senate leaders and the House leaders, Democratic leaders, are going to struggle to get anything passed that has any controversy to it anymore this year. Because their members are just simply going to lay down the gauntlet and say, nope, I'm not going to cast any more votes this way. I can't cast any more votes this way. And if enough of them band together, you know what? That puts the leadership in a world of hurt. It really does. And that could be a good thing. And I'll explain why in another show, but if they have to punt on a lot of this stuff, kick the can down the road, I like to say. And if they have to postpone it and just do extensions, little 60-day, 90-day, well, in this case, might be 3 or 4 month extension, that would mean it would kick things over into the next Congress. And if the voices in on grade.gov, for example, were heard in November, and the Congress looked completely different in January or February, when these things got kicked down the road to January or February, they might turn out to be better laws with a new Congress. Now, they could do the inevitable, the unthinkable in some people's minds, punt on all of these big ticket items till December and have what's called a lame duck session. And these members of Congress that maybe you and I voted out but are still members of Congress until January, till the new guys get sworn in, they could sit here and wreak havoc with all of these bills. And there's nothing we could do about it because we've already voted. That's also a segment that I want to talk about in another show. I'm going to have to let you go now. I hope you have a wonderful week. I'm excited about talking to you guys on Friday. And again, check out gradegov.com when you have a chance. Check out Senator Bennett, Bob Bennett. Check out Senator McCain. Yeah, he's got one of those primaries coming up. His isn't until August. But check out and see how he's doing, for example. And in the meantime, stay tuned.